WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV. This broadcast is committed to helping you understand the truth behind the news. Now, here's your host, Paul Dragoo.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. It's Tuesday, March 21st, and I'm your host, Paul Dragoo. Here's some of the stories we're following today. So President Joe Biden is bragging about his first veto. He tweeted his spin on the legislation, blaming MAGA House Republicans for supposedly risking your retirement savings.
I just signed this veto because the legislation passed by the Congress would put at risk the retirement savings of individuals across the country. They couldn't take into consideration investments that wouldn't be impacted by climate, impacted by overpaying executives, and that's why I decided to veto it. It makes sense to veto it.
It might make sense to him, but he doesn't explain what the resolution that he vetoed would have accomplished. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy did a better job here.
A new regulation from the Biden administration allows your retirement savings to be used to fund a political agenda you may not agree with. It lets Wall Street redirect your money into something called ESG investments. The goals of these funds isn't to maximize your return or grow your savings relative to other funds. These are woke priorities whose primary purpose is to push a far-left political activism.
Congress intended to block a Labor Department rule that allowed retirement plans to weigh environmental, social, and corporate governance, or ESG, factors when selecting investments instead of making decisions based on the best rate of return. Biden's veto means that he sided with woke Wall Street over American workers. Congress passed House Joint Resolution 30 in late February in a vote of 216 to 204. And on March 1st, the Senate followed suit with a 50 to 46 vote. So it's unlikely that either chamber will be able to overturn the veto. And even though Biden blamed MAGA Republicans for the bill, West Virginia Democrat Senator Joe Manchin called the veto absolutely infuriating. He complained that the veto is one example of how the Biden administration puts its radical policy agenda before the economic, energy, and national security needs of the country. And in a clear show of solidarity with Russia, Chinese dictator Xi Jinping arrived in Moscow on Monday for 3 days of talks with Vladimir Putin. So far, China hasn't openly supported Putin's invasion of Ukraine. It hasn't condemned it either. But Xi's visit illustrates that these two dictatorships are getting chummier by the day. Following China's role in persuading Saudi Arabia to reopen diplomatic ties with archenemy Iran, Xi came to Russia with a peace plan for Ukraine. However, Kiev has rejected the plan, which would allow Russian troops to remain in occupied areas of Ukraine. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, meanwhile, criticized the visit, saying that China feels no responsibility to hold the Kremlin accountable for the atrocities committed in Ukraine, and instead of even condemning them, it would rather provide diplomatic cover for Russia to continue to commit those very crimes.
The fundamental element of any plan for ending the war in Ukraine and producing a just and durable peace must be upholding the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine in accordance with the United Nations Charter. Any plan that does not prioritize this critical principle is a stalling tactic at best, or is merely seeking to facilitate an unjust outcome.
On Friday, the United Nations International Criminal Court issued a warrant for Putin for alleged war crimes. For its part, Russia has rejected the court's warrant for Putin and even threatened it. Former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev described the ICC as a pathetic international organization, and he warned that the ICC should not have taken action against a nuclear power. Quote, "Everyone is accountable to God and missiles," Medvedev warned. And speaking of the Russia-Ukraine war, out on the battlefield, Ukraine is running low on ammo. They've burned through most of their own artillery ammo and are now relying on allies for help. The U.S. and European backers are trying to quickly ramp up arms production before Ukraine loses the war to Russia. Ukraine wants about 250,000 shells per month, but the U.S. is only producing around 15,000 to 20,000 per month. Production of 90,000 per month would take about 5 years. Analysts say Russia is firing between 20,000 and 50,000 shells every day at Ukraine. Europe has also been having a very difficult time getting Ukraine enough artillery shells. They're experiencing an explosive shortage and won't be able to boost production for at least another 3 years. One German official told the Financial Times that the fundamental problem is that Europe's defense industry is not in good shape for large-scale war production. So joining me to discuss today's stories is the New American's publisher, Dennis Barron. Welcome, Dennis. Thank you for coming on and making time. So are you surprised at all that Biden would veto this, anti-ESG legislation?
I am not even remotely surprised. This is exactly what you might have expected from the Biden administration with regard to this legislation. They badly want to see the implementation of something called stakeholder capitalism, which is the broad umbrella term under which ESG exists. ESG is there to make stakeholder capitalism a reality. And stakeholder capitalism, briefly put, is the idea that corporations should exist for more than turning a profit for shareholders. They should benefit other stakeholders in the broader community, so to speak, which means environmental groups fighting climate change, those people who are concerned about woke values. These are stakeholder positions that corporations in the leftist mindset and the progressive mindset, corporations should be working toward buttressing those elements as well. They shouldn't just be for turning a profit for shareholders and returning that money back into the corporation for the benefit of the people who own the corporation. So, of course, a leftist president who's eager to put forth furthering the woke progressive agenda is going to veto any legislation that would stand in the way of that implementation of stakeholder capitalism.
Right. Now, does this rule, because I don't know if it's clear, does this rule or this rule that got vetoed, this resolution, or what's happening now, the Department of Labor rule, does it not kind of incentivize, almost coerce corporations into having ESG standards? Because I think that's kind of been lost in the way this has been described. It's not a matter of necessarily allowing or them having the freedom. It incentivizes almost to the point of coercion, does it not?
The entire structure of stakeholder capitalism from the top down, as it's been implemented from the United Nations through the World Economic Forum and now through the Biden administration domestically, does exactly that. And you can see this reflected in 10K filings and other investor presentations from practically any publicly traded company that you might go take a look at. You will find all sorts of language from these companies talking about their dedication to various aspects of ESG. Now, historically, and even up until recent years, before this became the enforced trend on these companies, you would not see that in an investor presentation. The investor presentation would be simply there to say, look at the ways in which we're operating this company for the benefit of our shareholders. This is what we expect from the future. This is why you want to invest. So an investment in a company that would be putting money away from actual company operations would have been viewed as a negative downside and would have dissuaded investors. Yeah. So, of course, companies don't have an incentive to do this other than they're being forced by the woke orthodoxy. Enforced from the top down through the UN, like I said, the World Economic Forum, which organizes and makes the entire apparatus functional, and now with our own domestic policy from our own federal government, we've created the conditions where companies are forced to do this, which is not in their interest.
Right, right. And it's terrible. We did a whole segment, I think it was the last week or the week before, on USG. Now, there are some good news. For instance, Vanguard has pulled out of the Climate Alliance, and we ran an article on them, and they basically said, we're losing money with this thing. BlackRock has lost $4 billion. I think that news came out about last month or a month or two. So people are starting to realize there's going to be some pushback, but I think it's just a matter of knowing what in the world this is, because most Americans, like a clip we ran by one of the representatives of the sponsors, Barr, was saying, most people don't know about this. But I think as they awaken, there's got to be, is there a way to oppose this, to get around this, even though this resolution didn't pass?
Well, the first thing that, and it always comes back to this, but the first thing everyone needs to do is be aware of what's going on.
Right.
This is whether you are a citizen participating in the electoral process as a citizen of the United States or down to your local level at your county or your township. It also goes along with you as an investor. And if you can spread awareness of this to other investors, that eventually will change policy.
Right.
And the fact is, even though it seems that this is monolithic, that companies are doing this and there's no way to push back against it, The fact is companies actually do want to make money. That's why they actually exist. And so if they feel like their investors are reacting negatively against this, it's not going to take a lot to get them to change course. And the fact that you just brought up Vanguard, Vanguard specifically changed course on ESG right. a week ago. Their leadership came out and said, you know what, this ESG just isn't working for us. We're not going to do it any longer.
Right.
That's tremendous. People who may not know, you know, everyone has heard of BlackRock and what a titan that is in the finance industry. Vanguard's bigger. So Vanguard.
I thought BlackRock was the biggest.
No, Vanguard's actually larger. It's a slightly different kind of corporation in terms of how it's organized. Hmm. And BlackRock, this is not to say BlackRock is not huge and has a tremendous amount of impact, especially because it's tied at the hip through its leadership to the World Economic Forum. Vanguard, a little bit different, actually a little bit harder to divulge exactly what their organization structure is. They've done that on purpose. But nonetheless, you know, they're so significant in the investment industry and the finance industry. For them to come out and take this statement and say, we're backing off of ESG, that is an earthquake in finance. And that's going to have downstream effects. And it just shows that people become aware, spread information about this. You see the negatives. It has an impact.
Right.
So, you know, be aware, first of all, be aware and spread knowledge amongst your friends, your relatives, your coworkers, other investors. Awareness is what starts the path forward to a better future.
I'd imagine as people learn about this, they're going to be more cautious or about where they put their investments and their retirements, correct?
It only makes sense that you would. Do you want to invest in a company that is not interested in turning a profit versus a company that is interested in turning a profit when you're talking about your investment for your retirement? And maybe you get a 5% return over here, but an 8% return over there. Does that ESG good feeling compensate you for the loss of funds and where you could make that investment? I think not.
It says something that they have to coerce you to be part of something. Of course, we've touched on this and we don't have time to keep going to, but almost all of it is based on bunk premises, whether it be, you know, racial inequality, whether it be this catastrophic oncoming climate change catastrophe that, you know, we know. So anyway, what do you make of Xi and Putin getting all chummy? I mean, this isn't surprising, right?
No, this is exactly what needs to happen from their point of view. So from Xi's point of view, from the Chinese point of view, Eurasian integration is absolutely necessary for China to achieve its aims in that part of the world first and globally overall. Russia, by the fact that it is a neighbor of China and China is the great rising power in that landmass, Russia has got to make its accords with China if it wants to have a successful future. So by circumstance, these two countries, which may not always necessarily agree on some finer points, are being forced together by circumstance.
Right. Now, are we seeing the breakup of this unipolar order? Because some would say this is a good thing if for no other reason than this this new world order that is to be put together where they would be part of it. It looks like that's cracking.
Mm. Looks may be deceiving. And I say that because you see the alleged relationship with payments between the Biden administration, just as an example, and China.
China.
Right?
So right. Good point.
The case that China must represent some sort of approach that differs from, you know, the unipolar Western-led world order is not necessarily supported by the evidence. China may, in fact, be looking to become the leading exponent of that in replacement of the United States. And I think that is a legitimate possibility, actually, because of the actions of our own leadership here in the West. Certainly, we've done much since 1970 to build up China's capabilities, to build up China's industrial might, China's financial basis, China's very, very geographically, strategically positioned in its location in the world. Its population is enterprising and large. So China does have many of the key ingredients you would think to become the leader of a new unified, you know, world on the Western unipolar model. And what we've done is create the conditions for China to take that leadership position. Is it a done deal? No, but I think that these people proceed strategically along more than one parallel line at the same time to see what's going to work. And, you know, China is certainly going to be in a position to dominate the Eurasian landmass, without regard for what Russia may do in its current time. Russia's time at the top, or what appears to be at the top in Eurasia, that window of opportunity for Russia to be in that position is closing rapidly, in my opinion.
Right. Now, do you foresee, is it possible that these alliances are leading to another world war? Is that possible between the Western New World aspect versus the Eastern, the East aspect, or the...
Under the current circumstances, I don't think you can discount it because accidents happen and passions are inflamed. If you can take the emotionalism out of the equation, I don't think that's the aim. I don't think that in the West that's the aim. I don't think in the East, speaking of China, that that's the aim necessarily. Could it still occur? Absolutely. This is a situation fraught with the potential for disaster.
Yeah.
And we're asking for, at least we're assuming for people to act logically and thoughtfully. And let's look at our own country. Do we really think our own country's leadership is even capable of acting thoughtfully and logically? I don't think so.
Well, thanks, Dennis. Let's see what else we have here. And is Big Brother here? A surveillance system backed by top Mossad, FBI, and CIA officials is being installed in schools, places of worship, and other civilian locations throughout the U.S. Investigative reporter Whitney Webb reported that Israel-based surveillance company Gabriel has installed systems throughout Israel, supposedly to prevent shootings and keep people safe. In the United States, the adoption of its surveillance technology was a bit slow, but that changed dramatically last year when an anonymous philanthropist gave the company $1 million to install its products in schools, houses of worship, and community centers throughout the country. How nice of them. That same philanthropist has promised to recruit others to match his donation, with the ultimate goal of installing Gabriel's system in every single synagogue, school, and campus community in the country. Gabriel's surveillance suite includes smart cameras, facial recognition technology, and AI to detect any abnormal behavior. Their selling point is that it can automate security systems and reduce the need for human involvement. The surveillance company says their systems can integrate well with drones and other security robotics and can be networked together to surveil an entire community to keep it safe, of course. So Gabriel's own website says their goal is to offer predictive policing or pre-crime. Minority Report, anyone? And for our last story, OpenAI, the company that built ChatGPT with artificial intelligence, announced last week that it has created the latest version of its product, ChatGPT-4. According to the company, ChatGPT-4, while less capable than humans in many real-world scenarios, exhibits human-level performance on various professional and academic benchmarks. For instance, the company found that ChatGPT-4 passes a simulated bar exam with a score around the top 10% of test takers, and it passes the SAT in the 93rd percentile. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman sees great potential for ChatGPT, but in a recent ABC interview, he also expressed fear about the potential downsides.
Because on the one hand, there's all of this potential for good. On the other hand, there's a huge number of unknowns that could turn out very badly for society. What do you think about that?
We've got to be cautious here. And also, I think it doesn't work to do all this in a lab. You've got to get these products out into the world and make contact with reality, make our mistakes while the stakes are low. But all of that said, I think people should be happy that we're a little bit scared of this. I think people should be
You're
happy.
A little bit scared.
A little bit, yeah,
you personally.
I think if I said I were not, you should either not trust me or be very unhappy I'm in this job.
So what is the worst possible outcome?
There's like a set of very bad outcomes. One thing I'm particularly worried about is that these models could be used for large-scale disinformation. I am worried that these systems, now that they're getting better at writing computer code, could be used for offensive cyber attacks.
There's a set of very bad outcomes. Dennis, do you think these being used for disinformation is the worst outcome out of this? No. Right?
Without discounting how bad that can be, because that could be extremely disruptive. No, that's not the worst outcome at all.
Right.
But let me say this. It's not a matter of if they will be used for deep fakery. It's a matter of when and how soon.
Right.
That's probably coming maybe as early as this year. I mean, ChatGPT-4 is extremely advanced. And by the way, ChatGPT-4, not the only player in that market. Google's own offering is in the market. Baidu in China is releasing a competitor to this. Apple has been making noises about how they upgrade Siri to more thoroughly compete with this. we are not just on the slippery slope, we've accelerated to escape velocity on this slippery slope, and everything is now going to change. I was thinking about this earlier, and I thought, you know, back in 2008 when these things came out, the smartphone, that was the biggest technological change in 30 years, 40 mm-hmm. years, maybe 50 years. That was the most significant.
You think it was more significant than the internet?
I think it was, yeah, ago? Because this puts the internet in your pocket all the time, no matter where you are, everywhere. This was a major synthesis of multiple technologies come together in a single device. That's going to pale in social significance, in political significance, in technological significance. That'll be a minor bump in our consciousness compared to what AI represents.
Is there anything concerning about this surveillance company, Gabriel?
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned pre-crime, the Department of Pre-Crime from the Philip K. Dick novel, Minority Report, film of the same name later on. I believe it was the same name as the novel in any case. But regardless, that was the idea running counter to our own American praxis of you are innocent until proven guilty. Mm. Pre-crime is you are just ipso facto guilty, even if you haven't done anything yet. And that's exactly what this is. And the integration of it with AI takes it to another level. The AI using the sensor network that this Gabriel company is proposing to install and is installing, or other sensor networks like it, could be used to identify what the AI considers to be behavior that would be unacceptable and could then vector in resources to control that behavior. And when I say vector in resources, I'm not necessarily talking about people. I'm not talking about security guards.
Apparently drones. It's
linked talking about drones.
And robots. Yeah. Good God.
Elon Musk, a couple of years ago, regardless of what you think about him, he does know a little bit about AI, and he referenced the fact that it would be possible and really not even all that hard to create swarms of killer drones today, which could be used and integrated with AI. Now, sounds fantastic, but we are actually seeing drones used on the battlefield in places like Ukraine to destroy tanks, to attack locations, to attack civilian infrastructure. This isn't really that much more difficult to do it. We've seen light displays, for instance. People marvel at these drone light displays that are put on over cities that sometimes, to celebrate various milestones or events. Coordination of drones to do less delightful things can easily be done as well. So when you start integrating this with very advanced AIs, and ChatGPT-4, just as an example, comes on the heels of GPT-3, which wasn't released very long ago. We're seeing really rapid advancement in the technology. The next stages of this, they will be here before the average person is even aware that they're happening. And we're entering into a different world, and we need to all have a different mindset and be aware of these things.
The future is here, man.
It's here.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Stay tuned, because after these messages, we'll be showing an interview with Steve Kirsch.
Hello, I'm Brandon House. Does your family have an emergency freeze-dried food supply on hand? With all that's going on in the world today, why would you not? We have attacks on our power grid, our banking system. We have the actual threat of a banking collapse. Of course, people are talking World War III, chemical spills, and so much more. I've had an emergency freeze-dried food supply on hand for my family since 2013. And then we began offering it to our audience as a service to them. But it's also a big part of our general operating budget. So thank you for purchasing it from us. We can help you, and you can help us. We all win. So let me tell you about it. You can order it right now and get free freight. We're offering free freight. For some of you, that's going to save you hundreds of dollars because you're ordering a one-year supply and a two-year supply. And we're offering free freight. So you can order it at WVWTVstore.com. That's WVWTVstore.com. You can also call and talk to someone over the phone, and they'll answer all your questions and take your order, track it all the way to your front door. That number is 901-468-9357. We have the gluten-free kit right here available, and it comes in the individual pouches of the individual entrees. Easy to make, easy instructions to follow. We have a 3-month, 6-month, 1-year, 2-year mega protein kit with real meat and the ultimate breakfast program as well. All the details, WVWTVstore.com. It has a 25-year shelf life, as I said, but we offer more than just freeze-dried food. We offer also emergency supplies. We've thought about the things you're going to need should the power go out or there's a crisis, like a little stove. All you need is a little bit of kindling, start a fire, use that stove, and then the custom pot goes on top to boil the water. We also have the water purifiers, as well as hand crank and solar radios and flashlights. Everything's available for you to check out now at WVWTVstore.com or using the number on our screen. Thank you.
Steve Kirsch is a Silicon Valley entrepreneur and philanthropist who has been at the forefront of the medical freedom movement for the last few years. The founder of Treat Early and Vaccine Safety Research Foundation has been as passionate as he has been productive in exposing unscientific pandemic policies, sometimes using unusual methods. In an interview with The New American's Veronica Karolinko, Kirsch offers his side of the viral story of him offering a fellow airplane passenger $100,000 to remove her mask for the duration of the flight. He explained that the reason he made the offer was to test the conviction of psychologically programmed mask wearers and to incentivize them to become more open to scientific and common sense arguments against masks. Let's watch.
Hi, everyone. This is Veronica Karolinko of The New American Magazine. Facing an overwhelming pandemic fatigue, all states dropped mask mandates a year ago. Airlines and airports ended them following a court ruling last April. Even though the effectiveness of masks in stopping viral transmission has never been proven either by science or real-world evidence, many still opt to wear them. Why? Steve Kirsch attempted to find out and made global headlines. Mr. Kirsch, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Veronica. Good to be here.
Sir, what happened on your recent flight to stroke some nerve out there? National and foreign media and many Twitter users condemned you for offering $100,000 to a woman to remove her useless face mask for the duration of the flight. Of course, many people sided with you, but the media echo chamber painted you in a rather negative light without even attempting to get your side of the story. Would you please tell us in detail about the incident on that Delta flight on March 10th?
Sure. So I'm sitting next to a woman. I think she's probably in her late 60s, maybe even older than that. She looked pretty old to me. I'm on a phone call and I'm talking about vaccines. And I hang up and she says, oh, are you in the medical business? I said, no, I'm a journalist. I write about vaccines. And she says, oh, I work in the pharmaceutical industry. And I said, oh, really? What firm do you work for? And she told me the name of the firm that she worked for. And so we started into a discussion. I said, oh, I see you're wearing a mask. You know, I've written a lot of articles on that. In fact, I was just doing some Twitter posts on it. But they don't work at all. And I'm curious, do you know of actually any studies that would lead you to believe that information is wrong? And she said, no, but she felt more comfortable wearing a mask. And I said, you know, well, I've done these Twitter posts about people in the past. I did a Twitter post and I showed her the post about offering her money. I said, look, if I gave you $100, would you take off your mask for the duration of the flight? And here's all the science behind that. It's really not protective, and you're going to remove it when you eat anyway, and your eyes aren't protected, and you can catch COVID. So I'm not really putting you at risk. And she says, no, I wouldn't do it. I said, you should do it for $1,000. And she said, no. Oh, you know, and then I raised it to, would you do it for $100,000? And she said, no, okay. And I said, do you mind if I tweet about it? She says, no, go ahead. I wrote the tweet out, and then I showed it to her. And like 2 hours later into the flight, it's a flight from San Francisco to Detroit. And I said, hey, look, in 2 hours, we've got 200,000 views. She says, I can't believe that. That's so amazing. And that was it. I don't even know her name. But I do know the pharmaceutical company that she works for. And that was it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it would go maybe to 1 million or 2 million, and it seemed to stall out at around 2 million. So I was actually surprised. I think because it was $100,000 this time instead of $10,000. But the whole point of it is to show that people were bribed into taking the vaccines. Like, a lot of people said, oh, I'm going to get a free hamburger, I'm going to get a free coupon, or I'm going to, you know. And so they bribed people into taking a medical intervention that was actually counter to their health. And they took it because of the incentives in many cases. And so I was trying to see if I could offer a cash incentive to get people to do the reverse, to realize that they've been fooled. And the answer is, so far I've been unsuccessful, but a lot of people want to sit next to me on the next flight.
Yeah, I bet. You know, some Twitter users imply that a woman's mask shouldn't have bothered you. Did it bother you?
Oh no, I'm not bothered by the mask at all. It was just a test to see how much it would take to overcome the psychological program.
Mm-hmm.
So the money is just used as a quantitative measurement tool, right? Because I could say, well, if I gave you a burger and fries, would you do it? It'd be a little bit hard to deliver that on a plane. So the easiest thing is just to put a monetary figure in and to see, is there a monetary figure that is high enough that can overcome the psychological programming and get people to actually look at the data and look at the Cochrane study on masks, or look at the Bangladesh study on masks and look at our video where we did a video on the Bangladesh study, or look at Professor Norman Fenton's article where he talked about going to the journal and objecting to the study. And there was even another objection that was published about how bad a study the Bangladesh study was that all these physicians are using to say that masks are effective. So I was hoping that for some amount of money that people would be willing to actually re-examine or actually look at the data itself, the study itself. You could look at the underlying study data, or you could watch the interview. I did an interview where James Lyons Weiler talked to Dr. Jason Abeluk, the Yale professor who was the first author of that Bangladesh study paper. And Abeluk was destroyed. It's a one-hour video in terms of his defense of their study. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, maybe I should have said, hey, maybe it would have been less creepy, as they say, to say, hey, if I paid you, I'm going to try it next time. If I paid you $100,000 to watch the video of James Lyons Weiler debunking Jason Abeluk, would you watch a 2-hour video for $100,000?
So you had a very normal, casual conversation. You were not obnoxious. You were not harassing her, or anything like that. Right.
No. Just like we're having this conversation right now is, you know, and I didn't want to record it because that would seem weird.
That would be weird, for sure. But
that would be weird. I mean,
since you exchanged ideas, since you conversed, did you present these arguments against wearing masks?
Yeah, I told her there was lots of evidence, but she didn't really want to get into it. So I never got a chance to go into detail about the Bangladesh study and say, hey, look, you know, you can go to the GitHub repository and download the data, and you can see that the graphs are on top of each other. You know, the data is so compelling.
Yeah,
but it was like, we're not willing to, even for $100,000, I'm not willing to re-examine my belief system for you.
Did you mention also that the air filters on all airplanes make the air super clean and safe to breathe? Because last year, when CEOs of major airlines begged Biden to drop mask mandates, they specifically stressed that the setting of an airplane cabin is as safe as it gets because of the advanced air filters and the downward direction of air. So even if someone coughs out the viruses, the flow of air keeps them actually on the floor, where they don't live for long and therefore cannot infect anyone. Was she aware of that?
I don't think so. You know, the first thing that she did was to wipe down the surfaces with a cloth. Now, what you're supposed to do, the first thing you're supposed to do is go up, and you're supposed to turn on the vent and have it blowing directly on you. That is the, you know, if you're worried about protection, that would be the first thing that you do. She didn't do that at all.
You know, sometimes people say, because I personally know someone who was against all COVID measures, never wore masks, very well-to-do people. They own a private Christian school in our area, in Northern Virginia, where we live. And they got sick. The family got sick. So they still had to go to work on Sundays, and they wore masks because they did not want to infect anyone, even though they knew that they never wore masks during this 3 years of the pandemic, but they did when they were sick. Maybe it was the case. Do you know anything about that? Was she sick?
Sorry, was the passenger sitting next to me sick?
Yeah, was she sick? Oh, maybe no, she no, just no, was no, worried no, about no, the no. others.
No, absolutely not. No, uh-huh. She never mentioned anything, and she didn't sound sick, and she took our mask off, and wasn't sick. That wasn't the reason. It's just the programming, and you see that with everyone. I mean, I've done this before. I did this with an earlier flight, and I tweeted about it. And you know, it's interesting that on that flight, when I offered $10,000, it wasn't creepy. So you know, it shouldn't matter whether the passenger sitting next to me is male or female. It's an offer to take off your mask. It has nothing to do with whether you're male or female. It's an offer to take off a useless accessory, a face diaper. Take off your face diaper and face the facts. I mean, that's what it is. Now, if that's creepy, I read these articles. I didn't understand how that's creepy. I was featured on this comedian on Fox. Mm-hmm. Starts with a G. You know who I'm talking about?
I just watched it in the morning. Yeah. I don't remember the name of the show either.
So he's in with this panel, and the panel thinks that, he's giving her, he's using that to show he's wealthy, and then is like, take off your mask first, and then, what are you going to take off next inside of a plane? I mean, give me a break. Are you kidding me? I'm married with three kids to a wonderful, beautiful woman. There is no way I'm propositioning someone on a plane with a line that says, "Hey, would you take off your for?"
Yeah, these people on Fox News, other media, I think they were really bothered with the fact that you are very wealthy. Like, this ultra rich guy just throws around ridiculous amounts of money just to persuade people to do what he says. Yeah. Something.
No, and you know. There was no intent for me to actually give her the money, because even though the an airline cabin, as you point out, is one of the safest places to be. I mean, a safer place would be outdoors, but the airline cabin would be the next safest place. If you're indoors, you want to be inside an airline cabin with the vent open. And so I was just asking her hypothetically, if someone offered you that money, would you do this for that money? And it was just to quantify the belief in the false narrative. And it's amazing. I mean, mm-hmm. I was astonished that for $100,000, we wouldn't be, I mean, I would have expected her to start searching on the internet. Do masks really work? And what's this Cochrane study on the, you know, mm-hmm. and to maybe open up her mind to the possibility that they might in fact be useless and that I might be right. But so it's a demonstration of how wedded people are to this narrative that even for $100,000, I can't break your trust. I think, so the question is, what does turn her around? Is she going to be wearing a mask for the rest of her life? Like, if Tony Fauci said, hey, just kidding, folks, you know, masks don't work. Just like I said originally, you should have paid attention to what I said originally. And, you know, it was so obvious, right? Because there was no new science. When Tony Fauci said, there's no reason for a healthy person to wear a mask, you know, which is true. Mm-hmm. So no reason if you're unhealthy to wear a mask either, because it don't work. But he said, there's no reason. And then weeks later, with absolutely no new scientific study, he changes his mind. And he says, no, you should wear a mask, with no new scientific study. Name the study that came out between the time Tony said they didn't work and the time that they said that they did work. It's so obvious to people, or it should be obvious to anyone who is a critical thinker, that if they made the stuff up exactly like they made up the 6-foot rule.
I'm not sure if it's that obvious. You know, the response feed to your tweet is so interesting to read as it reflects a general attitude towards masks, which became one of the most politicized symbols of the pandemic. You know, it was stunning to me that many people do still believe that masks works. And there were users, for example, who suggested that surgeons wear masks for a reason, which somehow proves that anyone in any setting can use masks to protect themselves. What's your response to that?
You know, surgeons wear masks to prevent them drooling on patients or to prevent blood that splatters from getting on them and them ingesting it. You know, it works both ways. It's a splatter protection. It's a large protection. But, you know, even the WHO, who I don't respect at all, but even the WHO has said for decades that masks do not protect anybody from a virus, that you need to wear this, PPE, the PPE where it's called a PAPR, P-A-P-R. It's a powered air purifying respirator. And you're wearing this respirator that's basically sealed. It's covering your eyes. It's protecting your mouth and nose. I mean, if you're not covering your eyes, forget it, right? All bets are off. The virus can just as easily get into these mucous membranes that are around your eyes and infect you that way. And it only takes a relatively small number of competent viral particles to infect you. Mm-hmm. And so it's like it's like leaving your house and leaving the side door open and thinking that the thieves can't get in.
Steve Kirsch has much more to say about the health hazards of masking children, as well as the dangers of the COVID vaccines. We'll show the rest of the interview after this break.
I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. I mean, whoa. Who knows what would come out of that?
Just imagine if we have a constitutional convention, the number of people who will be unhappy and the number of people who say the results are not valid, and then they'll just ignore the entire Constitution.
What we need are just more people that would read the one we have.
It isn't the Constitution that's the problem. It is the people who ignore the Constitution that usurp power and abuse the constitutional power that they ostensibly have.
If you can't enforce an existing piece of paper, how are you going to enforce a piece of paper that has a little more writing to it? In other words, it's been amended.
It's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable.
What can you do to elect good representatives and senators in your state legislature who understand the Constitution and are willing to take a stand?
As a lumberjack, I've been cutting wood for decades. My job is pretty straightforward. I see the wood, I chop the wood. My axe goes through every time. You remember when everyone bought all the toilet paper? And they wanted me to wear these things? And someone invested a lot of money into this stuff. They say I'm part of a global plan. I don't think so. It's too hot, it's too cold. You know what? The weather changes. We even hear crazy ideas on how kids should learn.
Here's the news, Dad.
Is it, son? Is it?
What about this one, Dad?
Nope. It's hard to tell what's real and what's fake these days. There's just too much baloney out there. At the New American, they cut through the baloney and give me the truth.
Visit thenewamerican.com and subscribe to get 50% off the cover price. And if you want an even better deal, use the promo code 10OFFSUB. Again, that's 10OFFSUB for more than 50% off.
Yeah, sir, you do such a tremendous work at your Vaccine Safety Research Foundation, and you regularly interview scientists and medical experts on various matters. What have you heard about people sticking to their masks and masking up their little children too? Why do they do that? Is there any rational explanation for that?
Yeah, well, the rational explanation is that they believe what the CDC says, and the but there is no scientific basis for masking your kids. In fact, there is a study that's published that was recently published in the peer-reviewed literature, and it showed that masking kids is detrimental, and it produces very high levels of CO2 that are dangerously high, that are right. that would cause headaches and would affect learning ability. And so masking kids in classrooms is unbelievably bad. It is counter to the peer-reviewed science, which shows that you are subjecting them to oxygen, basically, you know, I don't know whether it's oxygen deprivation, but it's the equivalent of having too high as a CO2 level, unsafe levels of CO2, 13,000. So normal would be 1,000 parts per million. And when you're at 2,000 parts per million, that's considered to be borderline. That is not acceptable. And anything above 2,000 is unacceptable. This and these were measured at 13,000 in kids with face masks on. So you're not doing your child any favors at all. And you're not protecting them against the virus. And the number of kids, you know, what's really shocking is that I looked at number of children or number of college kids that have died post-vaccine from the vaccine. They got the vaccine, they started having side effects and they died. And it was 10 times as many kids that got the COVID vaccine, that died from the COVID vaccine as has died from COVID. So these colleges are basically increasing the number of kids dying by a factor of 10 with these vaccine mandates.
Gosh. And about the mask wearing, you know, last year I saw this interview with Dr. Mark McDonald, who implied that those who still wear masks may suffer from mental illness. And then there was the study posted earlier this year saying that unattractive people tend to wear masks more often than those who are good looking. Do you have any comment on that?
I don't know. I haven't studied it myself. So that, you know, and in fact, that again would argue against this, you know, creepy thing that if you're asking someone to remove their mask, it's a very bad bet that you're going to be pleasantly surprised.
You mentioned that it was not the first time that you offered people money to...
No. This was the second time. And the first time I did it, they said, well, you offered her $10,000. You should have started at $100 because then it would have been more believable, right? Because nobody walks up to you and says, well, you take $10,000 to remove your face diaper. And that people wouldn't think that it was credible. And they said, well, if you started at $100, it would be more credible. So that's why I started at $100 rather than just said, hey,
and,
you know.
Yeah. And you previously offered money to healthcare officials at the CDC, NIH, and all the other agencies to debate with you and other scientists who are non-establishment. Please tell us about this effort.
Yeah. So, you know, I was trying to get an explanation for all of this evidence in plain sight. And none of these health officials would provide a counter explanation for example, all these people dying in VIRUS. There's 16,000 people who have, over 16,000 Americans in the VIRUS system who are reported as dying from the COVID vaccine. And VIRUS is underreported by at least a factor of 41. So that translates into 640,000 deaths, which is very consistent with other research, such as the paper published in a peer-reviewed journal by Mark Skidmore showing 278,000 people die just in 2021 alone. This is Americans in 2021. And, you know, so that's very consistent with
because of the vaccine.
Because of the vaccine, you know. And so there's plenty of data showing that that people are dying in just huge numbers from the vaccine. It's very troubling. And I couldn't get anybody to answer the question, guys, if it's not the vaccine causing all of these excess reports and VAERS, what is? Because it's not over-reporting, because I've had done independent surveys on healthcare workers, and their propensity to report is exactly the same now and for other vaccines as it has been in the past. So it is not an over-reporting problem, and it's not fraud, and it's not gaming, because there's no evidence of that. Mm-hmm. And so the only possibility that remains is that we have a very dangerous vaccine, which is killing people at a rate never before seen in human history. And so I said, can we have a discussion about it? And you know, got no response. And then I said, okay, so for $1 million, would one of you, and if it's one person, you take $1 million. If it's two people, you split it, so you get $500,000 each for a 4-hour conversation to answer all these questions that I have, because I don't want to spread misinformation. But nobody who's an authority is talking to me about it and explaining to me or any of the other people that agree with me, like, how we got it wrong. You know, how do you explain this? How do you explain, you know, but there's lots of stuff. I have a list of 150 questions.
You mentioned
nobody took me up on it. And so I then went and I sent a second email. I said, okay, name your price. If $1 million for 4 hours won't do it, then obviously you're being, I didn't say this, but obviously they're being paid by the drug companies more than that. So I said, name your price. Mm-hmm. So this is an opportunity for them to renegotiate to the drug company for their silence and actually make a lot of money, which is maybe what they did, because none of them came back to me and said, yeah, I'd be willing to do it for $2 million for 4 hours. And you see, just that coming back to me says that, wow, you guys are so corrupt that that you're being paid more than that. And so it would cost me that much just to have a conversation with you, just to, like, if they want to, they say they want that misinformation is bad and they want to crush it, fine. If they want to crush it, all they have to do is just answer a few questions. And I proposed this most recently to the Canadian, to the College of Physicians and Surgeons in Ontario, mm-hmm. the CPSO. And I emailed the president, the CEO, who's interested in stopping misinformation, and she never got back to me. And so I left her a voicemail at her work office, and she never got back to me. And it is amazing that these people who want to stop misinformation, I said, look, all you have to do is meet with us and just answer a few simple questions and explain to us how we got it wrong, and we'll stop, we'll completely stop, and we'll realize our error. And they don't even give us the courtesy of a response saying, no, I won't do that, or I'll do it for 15 minutes. Or, like, why are you even talking about this if you're not willing to walk the talk?
No, they're not. And I know that in Canada, they still have the booster mandate in place for the healthcare workers, and the healthcare workers, doctors and nurses, are dying at insane levels.
Yes. And Dr. William Mackus has mm-hmm. been superb in documenting the highly increased rate. And then when you write these societies that are supposed to be protecting the physicians, they never respond to the rates happening in plain sight. They just never respond for some reason. I can't figure it out.
Sir, I also know that you're in touch with the local and even maybe federal lawmakers. What do you hear from them, and how do you feel about this new oversight select subcommittee in the House that is tasked with investigating everything COVID related?
Yeah, you know, the only person I hear back from on any kind of regular basis in Congress is Senator Ron Johnson. He's just superb on this issue, and nobody else seems to want to talk to me in Congress, not on the Democratic side, where I've given tens of millions of dollars to the Democrats. I can't get a return phone call. I cannot get people to look at the data. I got a referral to a staff member once, and I sent my information to the staff member. The staff member says, well, I didn't read it because it's counter to what the CDC says, and we believe the CDC, so therefore you're wrong. And it's not really worth discussing because your information is not what the CDC tells us, so your information must be wrong. Mm-hmm. And that's the end of the conversation.
And how about this select subcommittee? Do you feel that they will find something out, something worth talking about?
Yeah, I hope so. They're focused on the origin of the virus, and yeah, they have it right in that this virus doesn't come out of nature. If it were a natural virus, it wouldn't be infecting, and it wouldn't be having this furring cleavage site that attaches to the ACE2 receptor in human beings. Like,
yeah, this is exactly what the former CDC director Redfield was testifying about last week, right?
Yeah. How does that happen? Explain the mechanism for that one for me.
But it's not just that. They will be focusing on the safety and efficacy of the vaccine. So they have very broad jurisdiction, actually. So I think they have already held a couple of hearings on that. And they were asking questions about why would you recommend, for example, little children getting these vaccines when we know that the vaccines are causing myocarditis in young men.
Yeah. And there's no doubt about that. But they haven't reached out to me. I'm still waiting for that phone call. And I hope that they will, because usually these members of Congress, they don't like to do things that show that they were wrong to recommend this or that they didn't have oversight. So they don't like to embarrass themselves that, let me have some hearings to show people that I was wrong to recommend this vaccine, which has killed, our estimates are, and there's a paper that's going to be that was published in a preprint showing that, and this was Israel and Australian data, and it showed that overall. Basically, you're killing about one person for every 1,000 doses of the vaccine. So if you've given out 13 billion doses of the vaccine worldwide, that turns into 13 million people who have been killed.
Mm-hmm. And now they're recommending boosters to infants, right? The CDC does.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, not even member Paul Offit, he's refusing the boosters. And there was a paper written showing it's unethical for college kids. Mm-hmm. But you see, these universities are ignoring all that.
Yeah, they do. Sir, I would like to thank you so much for your time today. Please tell us what's the best way to follow you and your work, and of course, the work that you do at the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation and the Treat Early.
Yeah, so the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation is at VaxSafety, VaxSafety.org. I can be found on Substack, stevekirsch.substack.com, and also on Twitter at stkirsch on Twitter, stkirsch.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of The New American TV. And remember to go to thenewamerican.com for more stories that tell the truth behind the news. We'll see you tomorrow.